Yes, it's that time of the week where we talk all things gardening. And this week, I'm joined by Scotty Sharp. Hi, how are you going?
I'm doing really, really well. It's such a pleasure to be back out here again.
I know. So what are we going to talk about today?
Well, it's just that time of year, isn't it? The sun's starting to, you know, be in the sky a little bit, you know, a shorter time. I think we might talk about getting some late tomato crops in at the moment, refreshing your basil as well, because it can get a bit tired at this time of year. And look, some of the diseases around, especially for your lawn, dollar spot. So we'll go over those topics later on if we get the time, but I'm sure we'll get some callers.
Yes, we have Karen from Taralba on the line. Hi, Karen. Thanks for holding.
Good afternoon.
Hello, Karen. How can we help you today?
Scott, I've got a fig tree and it's got beetle on the leaves. I've treated it twice with a pyrethrin spray, which killed the beetles, but they keep coming back.
Yeah,
and they just eat the leaves.
Yeah, they're absolute little beasts, aren't they? They leave like a skeleton of the leaf. And, like, it really pees me off at this time of year. I don't know, you, Karen, but I just love figs. This time of year, they are just the most delicious thing to eat. And if my fig tree is getting destroyed by these little beetles, I'm not very happy about that. So, it is important to try and keep them under control because you can see the damage that they do so very, very quickly. So these little things, these little black little sort of larvae that you're finding on the underside of the leaf are actually the larvae of the fig leaf beetle, which, you know, I guess it's not fantastic, but it's actually the larvae that do the real damage. Pyrethrum is a great safe thing to try and keep it under control. It might be that you're going to have to go to your local garden centre and get something a little bit more, malicious, I guess, towards the poor little things. I'd go and do that. You know, Malathon was a thing that used to be able to treat it. But if the pyrethrum is getting them under control and removing them, you're just finding that the beetle's just laying its eggs again. So that's the real problem. So it's just persistence with them. Turn your fig leaves over, have a look. If you see, some starting there, or you see some eggs, sort of lurking in under the leaves, just give it a good old spray at that point in time. So
yeah.
I really think persistence is the answer. And because you love good, delicious figs at this time of year.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's already fruited a few months ago, a couple of months ago, and got a beautiful crop, and then the beetle started after that. So, but it's just, it's just destroying the tree. So a weekly spray with pyrethrin, do you think?
There's no withholding. There's no issue with using pyrethrum like that. It's a really nice, safe, natural little insecticide to use. I mean, it's just from the pyrethrum daisy. So, no great harm there. Use it weekly. That's not going to harm the plants at all.
Yeah, okay. And if that still doesn't work, I'll get the Malathon.
Yeah, something a little bit harsher, but... Unfortunately, it gets humid at this time of year, and that's when the larvae and the beetles start to breed some more. So even though your figs might have fruited, the damage is there. You don't want it to be, wrecked up, for when it's fig time again next year.
Yeah, no. Okay. Well, thanks for that.
Okay, good luck with it. I'll always have some figs as well if you've got any spare.
Okay, I'll remember that.
Thanks so much, Karen.
Thanks for your call, Karen. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Just a question with that, like with the larvae, how do they go in the colder months?
Yeah, they'll have died off by then, or they've just turned into other beetle, the little fig leaf beetle. So it is important to try and get it under control now, because you're just containing the numbers, and because they're just going to come back next, or this year really, or early next year again for the figs in that area. So important to try and control it.
And we've got Estrella on the phone from Farley. Hi, how are you?
I am well, but my place is being attacked by red-shouldered leaf beetles. I think that's their name.
It is. It's a bit of a... Now, they're actually called the red-shouldered soldier beetle. So there's a bit of a tongue twister for you.
Soldier beetle.
Yes. Well, can you say the whole thing for us, though, Estrella?
Red-shouldered soldier beetle.
Hey,
okay,
we got this. Very good. Hey, look, they're actually you know, in some ways, not a bad little insect to have around, because they don't mind eating aphids and mites and other sort of tiny little insects. The trouble with these beasties, though, is that they can get form probably a bigger group than you need. Has that happened to you?
Yes, and what they do is denude my trees, starting with the stone fruit.
Yes.
But going on to roses and lily pillies and all kinds of things.
Yeah, so look, you're probably going to have to try and keep them under control in that case. I mean, like I said, they can be good, but once they start gathering whole platoons of the little things together, that's when they will start to do damage. They'll, you know, put some wilt on the plant, or, you know, the damage that's happening to yours. Look, some pyrethrum spray should do that for you. It's a nice, safe one to use on all different types of plants, including edible plants, and that should just generally keep them under control for you. So a good sort of soaking with those, that will dispatch them, sadly, but will keep them under control and stop the damage to your plant.
Okay, is there a better time to be spraying them? I'm thinking about catching native bees in the process?
Yeah, so look, for that, I'd be doing that around dusk in that case, when your bees tended to have gone back to the hive. I guess if you're an early riser as well, you could get up, you know, just before, you know, dawn and give them a spray as well. But dusk is usually the most convenient time to get out there and do that. The bees are away then. The other ones are just really sitting around. They've gone a little bit sleepy and dopey at that time of night as well. So you should be able to get them a good hit with the pyrethrum.
I'm on here.
Okay.
Thanks for your help.
Okay, now the red-shouulder soldier beetle.
That's an Australian native, is it not?
It is. So, look, and again, they're not a bad thing. So, yeah, look, don't sort of go out and decimate them all. Just try and keep them under control. But it is when they get those big swarms together, that's when they start to do damage.
Okay.
Thanks, Australia. Good to talk to you.
Okay.
Cheers.
Bye. Next, we have on the line Susan from Stockton. Hi, Susan. Thanks for holding.
Yes, thank you.
What's going on over in Stockton, Susan?
My passion fruit vine is not producing.
Oh, okay. That seems to be...
The vine itself looks very healthy.
Good.
And it's taken off and gone crazy.
Yeah.
And I have got passions on the vine. And they're quite big and full, but they've just dropped off the vine. And when I've opened them up, they're all like white and dry inside.
Okay. Look, Stockton is always a slightly problematic place, isn't it? Because I bet you're going to tell me, if I ask the question, that your soil's fairly sandy over there.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's always going to be a difficulty over in Stockton with your passion fruit. You're watering them, and they do need to have, you know, plenty of moisture to get that beautiful pulp in the fruit. But the other thing that happens is that all your nutrients really just leach down through the soil very, very quickly. So what I'd be doing is just trying to build up your soil generally, and this is for next year really, because I'll get onto, you know, the passion fruit issue, you know, about them ripening in a second. But you really need to start building up the soil now for next year using manures. And I'll be using cow manure in this instance for passion fruit rather than poultry manure, because poultry will, it's high in nitrogen. So you get lots and lots of green leafy growth on the plant, but you won't necessarily get the fruit that you want and need for your breakfast cereals. So heaps of cow manure. The other thing you need to promote the flowering of the plant is sulfate of potash. Now, sulfate of potash doesn't sort of build up and last in the soil. It leaches through very quickly also. So you've got the double whammy there over in Stocko, where you've got the sandy soil. You need to be promoting the flowering and fruiting with the sulfate of potash, but it's just going to almost doubly leach down through the soil for you. So you'd have to be really, really diligent, you know, come, I'd say, September with the sulfate of potash. You know, you'd be using that almost every couple of weeks at that time, to start to build that up in the soil just at the time when your passion fruit is going to start setting flowers and then start fruiting. So that's your two things, your cow manure, and come September, building up the sulfate of potash. Now, If you've got passion fruit on your vine now and they're still green, I'd sort of give up on it. There's really no, you know, sort of benefit now in just trying to keep them, you know, keep them on there. It's really just detracting away from the growth of the plant. I've got to say they're not going to ripen up now, you know, if they're really hard and green. The days are getting shorter, most definitely. I know when I get up nice and early in the morning to go to the gym and build up my muscles that, you know, 6 o'clock, you know, it's lucky that the sun's coming up. So you're just not going to get that ripening now of the passion fruit. So I'll just go and pick those off at this point in time. And it's a common, you know, we get lots and lots of callers as the year rolls on, you know, into March, April, and then even May. Oh, we've still got green passion fruit. What are we going to do about it? Answer is get rid of it. And just be prepared for next year. And, you know, as I said, once it gets to this time of year, it's just a waste of time.
Yeah, because we're not sure of the variety it's supposed to be. I don't think it's supposed to go black.
Okay.
We had green ones on there before and they were ripe inside.
Ah, okay. And look, you can get the yellow ones as well, so that can be a bit deceptive also. But if you're picking off a couple of samples and, you know, they're just absolutely shot inside, then I just wouldn't worry about it now and just start using your cow manure generally, and once you get to September, using that sulfate of potash.
Okay, then.
Okay.
Sure,
okay, good luck with it.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks so much, Susan.
Thank you. Bye.
Right. Bye. You're listening to Gardening Talk Back with Scott Sharp on 2NURFM. I'm Amanda McCreed, and we've got Penny from Madawi on the line. Hi, Penny.
Hi, how are you going?
Good, thank you. You've got an issue with a black soldier beetle in your lawn.
I'm not 100% sure, but I just thought I'd ring and ask and see what Scotty says.
Okay. Well, what's happening with your lawn, Penny?
Well, my hubby's got a really beautiful native garden, and all around the garden for about a metre, in some areas 2 metres out from the edge, it's just dead, the grass. Yeah, and across the road from us, we're on an acre here, and across the road was telling my hubby he had this beetle in his grass and it killed all of his grass. So I'm wondering if it could be the black soldier beetle.
Yeah, look, and black beetles, you see them, they really are probably only, I'm just holding my fingers up here for Amanda, she's going to be my measuring stick.
That looks
here.
About 2 centimetres.
About 2 centimetres, okay, thank you. What about an old system?
Oh, geez, I don't know.
So you'll get those little black beetles, you'll see them sort of up and around, crawling around. A great test to do, and I haven't spoken about this for a while, a great test to do to find out what little beasties are actually eating away at your lawn is to get like an old sheet or an old Hessian sack and moisten it off and put it over or near the spot where you think is affected and leave it there overnight, and then get up in the morning and sort of go whoosh, and pick it up from the ground, and you'll probably find those little beasties still in underneath there because they think it's night still in under there and they're quite happily still munching away.
Right.
And so it's probably worth doing that. Look, that said, regardless of whether you've got army grub, which is really, really prevalent, you know, in February and March, crickets, and you hear them as well, which is a great bonus of them, or your black beetle, it's actually a fairly standard treatment that you've got for them. And unfortunately, it is an insecticide. You are going to, you know, sort of have to get that into the lawn and down deep into where they are during the day. There's a variety of things. You can get hose-ons. You can get granular ones if you want to, or you can just mix them up and use the watering can to get those through. So there's a variety of ones. I don't mind the granular ones because you can sort of see where you've gone with it, and it's a little bit easier to, you know, put on a glove and sort of spread it around and then water it in. Main thing to do with that is to do it on or around dusk so that those little beasties come back up to the surface overnight, and you'll get them at that point in time. So don't do the bit that's died off. Do the whole of your lawn.
Okay.
How many acres have you got up there?
Oh, just the one.
Just the one acre. Okay. Well, that's not too bad.
Okay.
But look, or you know, if you don't want to do the whole lawn, do the bit that is affected and then do out from there a little bit as well, just to try and keep that under control. But I think, you know, just use your Hessian sack or, you know, the old pillowcase or whatever later on this evening and see what might be under there. But otherwise, jump down to your local garden centre and grab some sort of insecticide to try and keep them under control. Like I said, lots of different ones you can use and applications, different ways to apply it. Just get the one that's going to suit you best and make sure you do it later on in the evening, though. Most important to do that.
Yeah, okay, no problem. That's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Penny. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Cheers.
Next we have Cindy from Seahampton. Hi, Cindy. How can we help you?
Oh, I'm really good, thank you. Yes, I have a maria hedge, which I've had for years, but we neglected it for a little while.
Oh, so naughty, Cindy.
So we had to go in with a chainsaw to cut it back.
Yep.
So I'm just wondering what would be the best thing to put on it to help it revive, because it has got some brown patches in it now.
Okay. Did you notice with the old chainsaw, it's a really, really tough plant to actually cut. It's quite a hard wood. It's
it's shocking that they bend. A lot of it just bends.
Yeah, and then it's like it's almost like you're digging in the dirt with a chainsaw. You blunt it so quickly. So, look, they do love cow manure, so just a general feed of cow manure is going to be really, really good for them. But anything to try and get them back quickly, liquid fertilisers are always going to be the best. How long's your hedge, though? Is it a big hedge or...?
It'd be about 2 metres, maybe three.
Oh, but how long is it? Like, is it up your entire driveway or just a small one?
It's across my front yard.
Okay.
About 2 metres, maybe three.
Yep, okay.
And then down the side fence about the same.
Oh, okay, so not too bad at all in that case. So look.
Yeah, I put some sea salt pellets on when we had the rain on the weekend.
Yep. I went down out the front of my place the other day, and there were two old blokes there sort of talking about the world and, you know, what they had to do to get their lemon tree, strangely enough. And one of them said, I just use sea salt all the time. And I had to say, look, it's a great product and it's a great tonic and feeds the root system of the plant. But for your situation and the old bloke's situation as well with the lemon tree, it's not fantastic for sort of promoting the leafy growth of the plant. So, So down to your local garden centre, grab some cow manure, get a liquid fertiliser that is high in nitrogen. That's going to promote that leafy growth.
Awesome.
Yep, so I'd be definitely doing that. But it's as tough as nails, as you probably worked out with the chainsaw, and it's definitely going to come back for you.
Okay, can I ask one more question?
You can ask as many as you like.
Only because I just heard you talk about tomatoes.
Yep.
Okay, so I grow little tomatoes, heirloom tomatoes.
Yes.
So I'm about to pull them all out.
Yes.
But they're starting to re-sprout. Are those re-sprouting any good, or am I best to get rid of them?
Like, is that some seed that's from come off some old fruit or something? When you say re-sprout.
Exactly.
Yeah, look, let them go. There's no harm in doing that. They're going to be, you know, a good, tough plant. You know, if it's having a crack now, why would you pull it out? They're free for you. As we were talking, though, about the passion fruits earlier, you're going to get to a stage where they're not really going to ripen up too smartly for you. If you are getting them in right about now, you're going to get, March, April, May. So you've got 3 months or so. To get some, you know, plant growth and then some fruit. So you probably still will get another crop out of them before it gets into the depths of winter.
Okay, awesome. Thank you very much.
Go for it. Thank you, Cindy.
Okay.
Now, Scott, you were talking about basil earlier. How easy is it to grow this time of year?
It's really easy still at this time of year, but unfortunately, basil doesn't last forever. It doesn't like the really, really cold months of the year. So once we get to around May, that's when it starts to, you know, it starts to struggle really. You have to bring it inside generally at that point in time. If you've got a nice warm spot, you know, near the window on the, you know, the kitchen bench or whatever, great spot to try and keep it alive. But eventually, it's going to give up the ghost. You know, come, you know, June, July, even into those first couple of weeks of August, you're going to struggle with it. So there's probably about 3 months of the year you're really, really not going to have basil, and you're going to have to rely on buying it at the shops. And, you know, it's probably grown in a heated hothouse at that point in time. But that's just what happens. I guess you could also, now that I think about it, get one of those little cute little sort of greenhouse sort of things and set that up as well. The basil will do all right in there. It might be a little bit too sweaty for it, but yeah, look, I love sweet basil. There is perennial basil as well that you can get out there down at your local garden centre. It doesn't taste as good. Right. You know, I've got to be honest about it. It does have some, you know, basil-iness about it, but it's just never as good as that lovely, lovely sweet basil that we use in our pesto and in our pastas.
Mm. Yeah. You're making me hungry now.
Oh, no, I should stop, shouldn't I?
Yeah, you should. Now, we've got Robert from Madawi on the line, wants to talk about passion fruit. Hi, Robert.
Hello there. How are you going?
Pretty well, Robert. How can we help you with your passion fruit?
I've got a passion fruit vine down the back. It's one that's what do you call it? It's on a false fruit. What do you call it? Anyway.
Oh, it's one of the grafted ones, is it?
Yeah, the grafted one. Anyway, I've had it there for a couple of years. Last year I had it there, and I had a zillion flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it had flowers galore. It was very healthy and everything else. And I end up getting two passion fruit off it.
What was happening? Dropping off, were they, the flowers?
Pardon, sorry?
Were the flowers just dropping off, were they?
Well, no, they were there for a little while, and mm-hmm. I saw bees around there, and then they'd drop off. Yes. But I read up on it, and they talked about me pollinating them. They showed you how to, you know, rub the two different parts of the flower.
That's all right. I know it's all a bit sexy, isn't it, Robert, when you start looking at that sort of thing? But so you can pollinate if you want to, but if you've seen bees around there doing the sexy bit for the passion fruit themselves, so that's all really, really good. I reckon up at your place at Madawi, is it sandy soil up there as well?
Well, I put them in raised gardens.
Yep. Ah, okay.
We've got a good gardening mix in there.
Mm-hmm.
I fertilise regularly. I actually use a liquid manure.
I make
a cow manure up and sit in the drums for a couple of months at least, mm-hmm. and then give them a mixture of the liquid manure with water because I don't want to be too strong.
Yep.
I think I'm worried about that. As I said, it just and I do see bees around, but a lot of them are bush bees, and they're very small.
Yeah, yeah, that's all right. They still do the job for you. What I'm going to suggest for you, and we were talking about it earlier with the lady at Stockton about sulfate of potash to promote the flowering, and it makes the flowers stronger as well. So,
well, I'll put sulfate of potash on, and I've also used. Whatever other thing basically helps the flowers.
You've just got to be aware, though, that sulfate of potash, it's not sort of just a one-time use. You've got to use it probably every month, especially if you've got raised garden beds. It's going to be leaching back down through the soil. Now, the other thing I'm going to suggest to you is around the time when you see the flowers setting on the plant, so let's say it's around October, November or so, I'd then lay off on your delightful cow manure mixture because it could actually be stressing the plant out a little bit too much if it's too rich. So it's building up the soil, it's feeding it. But once you get to that, you know, September, October, November period, that's when I'd be pulling back on your cow manure mixture and just using the sulfate of potash.
Well, my flowers are coming again now.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, don't...
No, I mean, and there's heaps of them. I mean, I just cannot get over how many there are.
Well, at the moment, I would just almost go out there and pick them off. Even if they set a fruit right now, they're not going to ripen. It's just a waste of energy for the poor old plant. Look, if you've got the time and the wherewithal to go out there and just, you know, pinch a whole lot of those flowers off, you're not going to be doing it any harm by doing that.
And then prune the vine back?
Pruning the plant back. You could do that now if you wanted to. Give it a light shave over the top. There's no harm in doing that at this time of year. You wouldn't do it, for instance, though, around June, July, because any new growth will just burn off at that point in time. So if you are going to do it, Do it right now.
I had an ungrafted one, and I got 2 years of absolutely massive amount of passion fruit.
Yes.
But it wasn't a grafted one, and then it all of a sudden died back, and when I pulled it out, it had no root system.
Mm.
And that's why I went across to a grafted. They said, I go to a grafted, it'll last longer, but I haven't had a decent passion fruit since.
And how long's that plant been in the ground now, Robert?
This should be its third season, yeah?
Third season, okay. So, look, the other thing I'd probably do when you get around to passion fruit time later on this year is plant another plant somewhere because this one's going to start, the one you've got now is going to start to get a bit tired, might even start to die off. So what you're doing then is you're letting another one sort of grow through and take over, and you won't necessarily notice when the old one dies off. So you're just sort of a bit of succession planning there for you. You're getting your new passion fruit ready to go over the next couple of years.
Well, one thing I was going to change passion fruits, and I went to the nurseries, and no one had passion fruit vines last year late last year. They said the main mob that did passion fruit vines kind of shut down or something.
Look, that might have just been the grafted ones, but you could still just grow the old, the seeded ones. Anyway, thanks for your call, Robert, and good luck with that.
Yeah, appreciate it. This is Gardening Talk back with Scotty Sharp on 2NURFM. And Scotty, you were talking about dollar spot on the lawn. Can you explain what dollar spot is? I'm assuming it's something that is the shape, size of a dollar?
Yes, if only you could go and pick it up and take it down to the bank.
We'd
all be rich. look, it is a lawn problem. It's a lawn problem. It's a great, lawn problems almost affect us all, don't they? Unless you're living up in an apartment, I guess. But even then you could have a little patch of lawn if you wanted to, I guess, out in the veranda. Yeah, look, dollar spot is a little fungal disease that becomes quite prevalent around this time of year. It can be mistaken for, army grub, black beetle, crickets, because it starts to move out in a round patch. So the old Hessian bag, old pillowcase, wet it off, dust, blah, 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 blah. Trick overnight will often give you the answer as to, have I got an insect here or is it dollar spot? You also find with dollar spot, it might just get a slight grey tinge to it as well. So you get that sort of almost fungal look about it. So
and it just spreads and spreads.
Starts to spread and sort of destroys your lawn. Look, a couple of reasons for it occurring is, the humidity that we get in Newcastle and the Hunter at this time of year. And often people, and I know Mr. Sargent's probably, he's always out there mowing, but I don't know that he uses his mulcher thing. I think he sometimes uses it, where it just sort of spews out the back all over his thongs that he's got on because he's so safe. He's always telling me how safe he is when he's doing his lawns. So what happens then is you get the cuttings, all just going onto the lawn. You start to get what we call thatching, where it just sort of starts to build up and build up. There is a way to dethatch your lawn. It's a pretty ugly thing to do, and you don't even think about doing it at this time of year. But that is a reason for dollar spot. It just becomes sort of moist and wet in there. So if you're finding that it's becoming, fairly prevalent and treating it with a fungicide at this time of year is not working, it might be that, come September, October, you actually go and get a dethatching machine from the higher place and make your lawn look really ugly for a couple of months. But it does work and it makes for a very healthy lawn. Look, what you can do, though, is treat dollar spot with a fungicide like Mancozeb. You can either spray that around or you can mix it up in the watering can. It's probably going to be a little bit too, overused if you're using the watering can. So just a good spray with some Mancozeb. Always, though, Mancozeb is a powder, so if you're going to mix it up in the spray, it'll clog it up. Use some hot water initially just to dilute it.
Wonderful. Well, that's good timing.
There's the song.
Thank you very much, Scott. We'll catch you in a couple of,
whenever Jude can't do it, but
that's
we always wanted to do it.
We do. We'll see her next week. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Amanda.